Welcome to the Open Bedroom Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Kalo. Welcome to conversations about open relationships, online dating, conscious uncoupling, and creating the relationship that truly aligns for you. If you enjoy this podcast, I hope that you do a couple things for us. Would you subscribe? Would you write a review? Maybe share us with your friends. And if you extra like us, there's a link in the show notes here for my Patreon that does help pay for the creation of this podcast. And lastly, follow us on The Open Bedroom. We are on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another podcast. Today I have Dr. Allison Ash. She's an intimacy coach and educator, a lecturer at Stanford, and the founder of Turn On Love. And today our topic is all about moving through shame, which is a topic I've never had on this podcast before. So I'm so excited to really dig in. And Dr. Allie, will you tell us a little bit more about you?
Sure, yeah. Okay. I'm a trained sociologist where I specialize in gender and sexuality. And as much as I enjoyed teaching in academia, research was not the thing that made me feel most alive. Mm-hmm. And so after I got my PhD, I founded my own company so that I could offer education for a wide range of folks and work with them in a coaching dynamic to really support them to have a level of emotional and sexual intimacy that they want. Because the reality is that intimacy is a skill, is something that we can all learn, but it's not well modeled or templated for us in society at large. And even if you have the most progressive sex education, I'm highly doubtful that they included intimacy skills. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that intimacy is what, in my opinion, at least makes life so rich and meaningful and nourishing and grounding. And I just really want to be able to create that positive impact and help other people feel empowered in these ways.
So how would you define intimacy? Because I know as a 40-year-old woman, it's taken me 38 of those years to try to figure out the difference between like just having sex or having a boyfriend and like what does true intimacy actually mean? And then I have more questions after that.
Yeah. I like to define intimacy as mutual shared vulnerability, right? And we can have lots of different kinds of intimacy. You can have intimacy sexually, emotionally, physically, intellectually, spiritually. And so when we think about sexual intimacy, it's that experience of feeling known, understood, safe, vulnerable, exposed, where you can explore desires and preferences. You can name your needs and wants. You can explore the messiness of sex because you feel this sense of acceptance, love, belonging, connection that was reciprocated.
Are we wired for intimacy?
I believe we are. I think that we are wired certainly for connection and for belonging. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about shame, actually, this goes right to the heart of it, because shame is a fear of rejection at its core. It's mm-hmm. a fear that there's something that's wrong with us. It makes us too much or not enough or defective in some way. Mm-hmm. And that thing that we're ashamed of is going to cause us to be socially rejected and shunned. And that's a very scary and painful experience. And it's painful because we are interdependent beings. We are wired for connection, for belonging. When we think back to when we were in tribal societies, if you were shunned from the tribe, you would die. We could not survive alone. And so folks who were shame resistant, where they felt shame physiologically in their body, were more likely to survive and pass on their genes. So we are evolutionarily hardwired to be adverse to shame. It's such an uncomfortable feeling. I can even just call up shame in my body right now, and I feel a little nauseous, and my chest is tight, and my stomach hurts, and I want to collapse and disappear. Right? It's such an uncomfortable experience. People naturally, instinctually move away from shame, but then, of course, there is the caveat, because when we hide the things that we're ashamed of, which is a natural response, we don't get that acceptance and that belonging that we need to be able to move through shame. It's the antidote to shame.
Ooh, we just got deep real fast. Okay. So I'm going to try to draw the lines between, I guess, where I'm seeing this. So we're in our early 20s. Okay. We're children. We're wired for intimacy and connection. We're wired for connection with our parents and our friend groups and the world that we live in. And we grow older and we start to learn, or we're programmed, this is shameful. Don't do this. Don't do that. Cover yourself. Don't spread your legs. Don't do, right? And so then the shame kind of gets implemented into our lives. And then as we're entering our 20s, where we're sharing intimacy with other adults, I'm sure it's incredibly difficult to be vulnerable and to be intimate when you're covered in all these layers of shame that have been programmed. Am I on the right track?
You're absolutely on the right track. And what I
Okay.
would add is that we internalize shame and we're not born with the voice of our inner critic. This is a voice that develops in response to early experiences of being ashamed. Because it's so painful and scary, we would rather be our first line of defense. So I'm going to be my own worst critic. I'm going to shame myself so that I behave in a way that's going to be socially acceptable, and not risk being shamed by others. And then our inner critic takes the microphone of our internal dialogue and hogs it and doesn't let any other voices have any airtime. And what is a natural protection strategy starts to run rampant and actually is no longer serving most people.
Jesus, what do we do about this? Right? Because I think we're walking around as adults that don't know how to be intimate with our partners, with our children, with our families. And we're walking around as these shells that we're just protecting ourselves and we're not showing our full emotions. We're not being vulnerable. How do you even turn that around?
I really love Brené Brown's work on shame and empathy. I think she's such a rock star in the field. And she talks a lot about shame resilience, which includes a couple components. And the first thing is to recognize shame, to really be able to notice when you feel ashamed, particularly because of exactly what you just said, which is that it's the water we're swimming in. It's so deeply internalized. Sometimes it's hard to even notice that we are feeling ashamed or that we've adopted these narratives that are harmful. And it's also really important to be able to cultivate intimate relationships where we feel safe, accepted, and belonging. And then we can reveal the things that we feel ashamed about. And when we can receive empathy normalization, it makes so much sense that you would feel that way. Contextualization. Society is really set up to have you feel that way. And empathy, I get the impact of how you're feeling, and I feel that with you. Like I'm here with you in this experience. You're not alone. Not only am I not rejecting you, but I'm holding you through this experience. Then we can start to release the shame that we're feeling. The key is to do it with safe people. If you do it with somebody who just is like, oh, yeah, that's really weird, then that might actually more deeply ingrain the shame. And so we want to do it in a titrated way. We don't want to like totally dump our shame on somebody and feel overexposed to have what we call a shame hangover, where the next day you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. And you spin out and shut down and collapse. I think it's helpful to expose a little bit of shame and see how the other person responds. Do they hold you through it well? Do they empathize? Do they offer the acceptance that you're looking for? And then if you're getting that experience, and ideally, hopefully they reciprocate, maybe not exactly in that same moment, but if we zoom out and look at the long run of a relationship, that there's some reciprocity there, then you can start to reveal deeper shames and things that feel more core to your selfhood. And I think one of the things that Brené Brown talks about that's really valuable is, I think a lot of people only reveal what they think is socially acceptable, and then they get this hollow facade of an experience of belonging because they feel like they belong for the image of themselves that they project rather than for who they really are. And there's this idea called the myth of normality. So if we only talk about what we think is normal, it perpetuates this myth that that's actually what's normal. But in reality, so much more is air quotes normal. But we don't believe it to be because fewer people are actually talking about it.
I'm curious what kinds of themes do you see around shame, like the biggest things people are shameful of.
Yeah. In my work, there's a lot of shame around not feeling sexually competent.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of shame around having big feelings,
mm-hmm.
having needs, air quotes, needy, right?
Mm-hmm.
All humans have needs. We are interdependent beings. And the amount of baggage people have around needs, and it looks so many different ways, but we live in a society that really prioritizes and values people being self-reliant and independent. And it can be really hard to acknowledge that we have needs. There's a lot of shame, I think, around either the experiences we've had or the experiences we haven't had,
mm-hmm.
right? Not being experienced enough or being slutty. There's shame around desires, right? I want to be kinky, or I'm really into this fetish, or
mm-hmm.
I really like this kind of porn, or even that I watch porn at all, right? I think that those are some of the broad categories, but really the reality is that I think most people hold some amount of shame around their sexuality. And then I think there's also just shame around not being able to have the kinds of experiences that you want, whether that's an intimate relationship or maintaining intimacy in a long-term relationship, that there's something that is wrong with you, that is the reason why you're not able to have the experiences that you want, that you're some sort of problem that needs to be fixed.
I see that a lot too. I think I want to take the, I want to have you walk us through an example. So if we go back to, I have needs, which
mm-hmm.
all of us do,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to appear too needy. I don't want to scare people off. Can you walk us through that titrate of shame experience, taking the needs conversation through that, how that would work with your partner? Or
yeah.
person that you trust, best friend, whatever.
I think one of the best ways to create safety is to name the elephant in the room.
Okay.
In other words, going meta, talking okay. about shame.
Okay.
So saying something to the effect of, I have a really hard time acknowledging my needs and owning them. And it's hard for me because I feel like I should be able to handle it all on my own. And I feel afraid that if I ask for what I need, I'm going to push people away, or that they just aren't going to be able to meet them. And then I'm going to feel so exposed because I actually owned it. And it's a lot easier to not have my needs met if I'm trying to just pretend I don't need it. And I'm just wondering, like, how does it land for you to hear all of this? And can you relate in any way? And so then, like, you're having a conversation where you're just talking about needs, and maybe your partner or your friend is like, yeah, me too. Oh my God, that's exactly how I feel. Or maybe they're like, oh, for me, it works this way. It's a little bit different. My fear is that nobody's going to meet my needs. So I just don't even acknowledge that I have them, or I'm so focused on meeting other people's needs because I want them to like me that I don't have the space or time to assess my own needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe it might look like saying, maybe we can talk about specific needs that we have and see if we can start to explore what it's like just even to talk about them, and maybe get to meet them for each other. But even just talking about them could be really helpful.
Mm.
And then maybe you start talking about like a need for, maybe like you have this ultimate need for more sex or kinkier sex or whatever it is, but maybe you start talking about like, I have a need for more physical affection,
mm-hmm.
or I would really like to have more quality time and attention. How does that land for you? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there's a way that you can start with something that feels maybe slightly more accessible, both for them to be able to meet your need, but also for you to practice, get some good positive data points, set yourself up for some of those small wins in talking about something that feels like not the most vulnerable, most exposed, emotionally naked type of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's so yummy. Like, I'm thinking about just recent conversations. So Scott and I are in an open relationship, and we have a few partners, and one of them is so good at communicating her needs. And I think that door opened when I started to say, like, we're here to help meet your needs. It's okay to bring them to the table. Where are you feeling depleted, exhausted, worn out, desiring of something more? And she'll say, well, I have 4 kids. I'm fucking exhausted. I want to be touched. I want someone to play with my hair. You know, like, can we just snuggle on the couch and just hold each other? And I'm like, absolutely. That is like my favorite thing to do. And I love creating space for people that I care about, friends too. What do you need? Come over here. We love to fill your need. We'll make soup for you and snuggle on the couch.
Oh, my, I'm melting hearing you say that. Right? I think we all need somebody like you in our life who creates permission. That's what you're doing when you say it that way, is I'm giving you permission to have needs. I'm curious about your needs and I want to be able to meet them. And that's acceptance. That's communicating belonging. That's creating safety for somebody to open up. And I think that's so beautiful.
And so accessible. Like, we can all do this.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to do the same thing with my boys. I have a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. And ever since they were little, I've always said, like, what do you need? No, really, what do you need? Like, I know you want ice cream, but like, why do you want ice cream? What else is going on underneath the surface? And they're like, I just need a hug. I need to have a date with you. Can we go have dinner together? I'm like, absolutely. Uh-huh. And I love it. Like, when you start to build this into your life, it spills over to all of the people in your life where you become more accessible to meeting their needs. And then they're like, oh, what can I do for you too? You know?
And that parenting is such a profound change that we need in our society, because then they're learning from an early age, it's okay to have needs. Mm-hmm. How do I go inside and identify what I need? Mm-hmm. How do I name my needs with somebody else? Probably some component of, like, how do we negotiate getting needs met? Maybe even a little bit of, like, how do I deal with disappointment when my need can't be met right now? And stay in connection in the face of a no. Yeah. And then they get to model that for other people in their lives. And that's just creating such a profound ripple effect.
One of the things as you were going through that kind of spiral is I was thinking, what happens when you have to be the person to say, no, I can't meet your need? Because Scott and I, my partner, we're playing a lot with that, where he's in the middle of an engineering degree. And we're second to last semester. So you can imagine he's like modeling and building all this stuff and spending 40 to 60 hours a week just on engineering homework. And I have all these needs and all these desires and I want to get naked with him. And he's like, I feel really overwhelmed by all your needs. And instead I'm like, no, I just want you to say, no, babe, not right now, but Saturday at 7 o'clock, like, I'm all yours, you know? And so I think that too, we don't realize on that other side, the way that we have to deliver the no, I can't meet your need can also be gentle and sweet and calming to the other person's nervous system. Because I don't know about you, but when my needs aren't being met, I'm like, ah.
That's exactly right. And I'm really on this like crusade to change the way that we relate to no. Because I think the reality is when most people say no, they feel guilty or frustrated because they have to say no, because saying no is hard. And they disconnect because they feel bad that they're a no. And when most people hear no, they feel ashamed for asking, mm-hmm. or they feel rejected. And so they disconnect when they hear no. And it's the disconnection that feels so painful. That's what is actually the rejection that people are experiencing in the face of a no. But that's the intervening variable between no and rejection, is the disconnection. If we can say no or hear no and stay in connection. So, no, honey, I wish I could, but I just don't have the capacity right now. Or no, and I'm so flattered that you want to be next to me and be close with me, and I look forward to the time that I feel available for that. Or no, and I appreciate the courage it takes to continue to advocate for what you want and what you need in the face of knowing how busy I am and that you might not get a yes. Like, thank you for continuing to name your needs with me.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that in a way that maintains connection with eye contact, with some touch, if that's available, that communicates I accept you and love you in the face of not being able to meet your need. And then on the receiving end, say, oh, I'm disappointed. I really want to be so close to you, but thank you for naming your boundary and letting me know what you're available for. I really appreciate that you're staying in connection with me in the face of not having more capacity. Right. And it takes practice. This is not easy. Again, when we think about what's templated for us in society, this is often not it.
No, I was just thinking this is a whole new ballgame that no one has the tools for and that needs to be done and needs to be learned, which kind of leads me into you have something big happening in January that's going to teach us these skills that we need. Do you want to talk about it?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
So there's a course that I teach at Stanford University called Sexual and Emotional Intimacy Skills. I really love how progressive that school is. And I take it outside of academia and I offer it virtually January through March. And it's a 8-week course where I go over a huge number of skills that are important for being able to cultivate and sustain healthy emotional and sexual intimacy. And it's great for individuals, for couples, for monogamous folks, for non-monogamous folks. And if you go to turnon.love/intimacy, you can see the syllabus and read all the reviews. If you're listening to this podcast when it's not January through March, you can contact me to access it on demand, because I really think that this is the game changer. So many people tell me, I wish I had access to this when I was 18, or I just didn't. I had a sense of this, but I didn't know actually how to do it. So it's a experiential skill building. It actually teaches you the how to, as well as give some context to unpack what the blocks are for people, what actually inhibits people from being able to implement the skills.
I love that. And how interesting to be able to take a class that's offered to Stanford students and get to be a part of that online. That feels pretty special.
It's I love teaching it to undergraduates and graduates. It's really interesting setting to be getting people when they're 18 to 25, but I also dearly love teaching it to a wider audience, people who are 20 to 60 or 70, because it's never too late. That whole adage, an old dog can't learn new tricks, is utter crap. And it's amazing to have participants contact me and say, I'm finally having the relationship I always wanted, or my partner and I have a level of intimacy that has felt so distant and out of reach, or I'm feeling more comfortable dating and putting myself out there and flirting and whatever it is, it's creating real world change. And it's so inspiring. It's really the fuel that moves me forward in this work.
Ah, so yummy. All right. So we're closing out our conversation on shame. For those of you listening, Dr. Allie and I are about to record Champ Quality Pussy Eating. So if you just hang tight one more month, that's going to come out. And I will make sure and link both of those episodes into each other. So if you're watching one, you can go back and watch the other one. I'll also have in the show notes below everything for you to connect with Dr. Allie, all her links, the link to her program. And yes, ma'am, you had another thing you want to say.
Well, I just want to say, we'll also talk about Champ Quality Pussy Receiving and how not only you can be amazing at giving pleasure, but also how you can be amazing at receiving, increasing your capacity to receive.
Oh my God. So yummy. I can't wait. All right. So we're going to end this podcast episode. You guys hang tight, because in a month we're going to release the Champ Quality Pussy Eating and Receiving, and then you can go back and watch both of them. Thank you, Dr. Allie, for being on. And
thank
then
you.
We can have our yummy conversation in just a second. Bye. Hey there. Did you know that I do online coaching? Yes, I do online coaching in the sex and relationship space. Some of the topics that are near and dear to my heart are open relationships. So that includes polyamory, swinging, or what we call the lifestyle. I also love conversations around online dating. We're talking Bumble, Tinder, Field, and more. And then the last thing that's really passionate and close to my heart is conscious uncoupling. That means we get to break up with people with love and respect, with dignity and hope. We get to create a life for our children that gets to be a little bit different. We can do things better than we have in the past. So if any of these topics sound interesting to you and you'd love to get some coaching from me, check out the link in the show notes or the link in my bio for more information on coaching with Jen.